Welcome to the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. I am your host, Megan Kenny. Let's get started. Buddy, it's crack-a-lackin' out there, as I like to say. Crack-a-lackin', I wonder where that comes from. What? Crack-a-lackin'. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I say it a lot. I don't know where it comes from, who started it, where I first heard it. But, you know, it's my thing. It's kind of like what I like to say. So here we are, everybody. What do I want to talk about today? You know, I think I'm just going to rip on this download that I got. Whatever, call it a download. I'm finding that download isn't always maybe the most appropriate, accurate term, because we have downloads and we have uploads. So you never really know where the information is coming from. A download to me is when we're moving from that space of inspiration. So think about when you've been inspired to do something. You just get up and you just do it. Oh, I was just inspired to do this thing today. It really didn't come from you. It came from something moving through you. It came from something above you, coming down the crown chakra and moving through you. That to me is a download. An upload is when the information has come through an activation that has happened from within. So think about light, like a light code activation, or like something activated, some wisdom held in your DNA because of the place that you were in, the vibration or the frequency that you brought yourself to through a meditation or a breath work, whatever. And then something got activated, because if we think about in the metaphysical sense that we all have wisdom retained in our organs, in our DNA, and that certain places, people, places, things can activate the wisdom inherent within you. That to me is an upload. So you hear the word download happening out here in the space. You don't often hear about uploads, though. So you never really know where the information is coming from. When something has just been activated either beyond you or within you or from you or above you. You know what I'm saying? So when the information comes in and you didn't actively, like, strain your brain to think your way through to get to that answer, chances are it's either a download or an upload. And you can usually maybe figure that out depending on what practices you're participating in that help you access higher states of wisdom. Or should I say higher states of knowledge that therefore are wisdom. So I had whatever you want to call it, a download, an upload. I don't really care. It was good information. That's what I know. And I had this vision, I guess you could say, of somebody asking me if there was one thing that I wanted all of humanity to know and accept as truth, what would it be? And I already have my answer. I was instantly able to answer the question. And it is that we co-create our reality. That we are active participants, either on a conscious, subconscious, or unconscious level, in which we are actively co-creating the experiences that we have in our life. And I've always had a little bit of reservation. I've had a little bit of a reservation around saying that to people. Probably because there have been times in the past where I have said that, and the ego instantly defends against it. Not mine, but the person that I'm delivering the information to. And it's easy to defend against that when you're caught in victim consciousness, thinking that all of the stuff out here that's bad or painful is happening to you, and you're just this helpless, innocent victim, and you didn't do anything to deserve it, and woe is me, and why is all of this happening? If you're caught in that state of mind, it's going to be like impossible to understand and accept that you are co-creating your reality. But the truth is that you are. Now, you might not be engaging in something that is creating the cause and effect in your life in a conscious, deliberate, intentional way. Chances are most of your life experiences are intertwined in this cause and effect, but it's unbeknownst to you. So we have the one category of the co-creation of our own reality, in which we are like actively going out and doing something that then yields an effect or a response from other people or a response from the environment or the universe or whatever. Like, we are going to go ahead and do something active. We're very active and conscious about it. And then we get a response, whether we say something very specific to somebody or just something at all, or we do something and we get a result. That's how you co-create your reality. When you go to the gym and you're working out and you're seeing results that you like, that's a conscious co-creation, because you said, I'm going to go to the gym. My goal is to do X, Y, Z. Then I get the result. Okay, everybody can accept that. But what people have a hard time accepting is that the things that are happening in your life, you are participating in and engaged in this cause and effect this dyad, this interplay, which is way beyond your conscious awareness. So when we think about this, I want to be really clear that I am not delivering this, what I would call a truth, because I believe this to be a universal truth. This is a universal law that I'm talking about here. It is not to induce blame or shame. If you are co-creating your reality and you don't know it, you cannot therefore be blamed for the effect that is happening, because you don't even know that you're participating in it in the way that you are. So this is the whole essence here, people, of what it means to become more conscious. Because when you become more conscious, you then become empowered over how the shape and course of your life is unfolding. You start to really get clear about these unconscious elements that are co-creating your reality. That's really the bulk of when you like sum all of this up about self-healing and self-discovery and transformation and getting really clear and moving yourself to a higher state of awareness. This is what it comes down to. This is it. This is the one truth that you come back to or discover for the first time, which is that you co-create your reality. So when you become highly conscious about what your deeper patterns are, and patterns, I don't mean like the things that are always happening to you or the things that you always do. I don't mean a pattern like that. I don't mean like this pattern that like is happening over and over again that you keep doing. No, I mean the patterns that are encoded in your DNA and in your soul's blueprint that you don't even know about. That your soul brought with it when it came into this lifetime and jumped into this body. That has been a part of many lifetimes of yours. In many different experiences. And you show up in this body in this lifetime, and you may encounter it for the very first time. It is still a pattern. This is why I want to make this distinction. The pattern that I'm talking about is like a cosmic, metaphysical pattern that's encoded in your DNA that has happened many, 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 many times over in previous lifetimes, but may be the first time that you experience it or encounter it in this lifetime. And if it's the first time that you're encountering something in this lifetime, you certainly wouldn't consider it a pattern, right? Because a pattern means something repetitive. That's not what I mean. I don't mean what's playing out in this lifetime. It could be the very first time that you encounter it. It's still a pattern. And so if we think about how we're co-creating our reality in an unconscious way, what I mean is these energetic patterns that are encoded in you, that you've brought with you into this lifetime, that begin to play out beyond your conscious awareness. You may be carrying a certain frequency, a certain energy, a certain vibration, and that's what you're giving off as you walk into a room, as you sit here right now in this quantum space of this reality that we live in. And as a result, you're giving that energy off and you don't even know it. And it is aligning with whatever forces out there exist that then yield back an experience for you. Are you guys with me on this? I know this is a little, you know, we're getting out there, okay? But I'm talking about like fear-based energy, basically fear. That's basically what it comes down to, fear-based energy. Because everything that is problematic in your life can be reduced down to a fear. Peel back the layers of the onion. Ask yourself, when I'm struggling with something, what is the core fear here? And always go to, is it I'm not good enough or I'm powerless and out of control? And talk about those as fears. Do I have a fear of unworthiness? Do I have a fear of powerlessness? Because it's that fear that will then generate a response from the environment that lines up with that fear. Therefore, you are co-creating your reality. So you maybe have heard this in other kinds of terms, like law of attraction or what have you. But everything has to do with the fact that you are the orchestrator of your own life in all ways. And I'm not just talking about painful experiences either. I'm talking about high level, high quality, high vibration experiences also. That you are the creator. It's you. You. You are the center of your own universe. And I don't mean that in a narcissistic way. Because a narcissistic way would mean we're coming out of some sort of fear, some sort of lack or inadequacy, and we're trying to compensate. And then as a result, we're going to sort of move into the space of being like bravado, you know? It's the bravado energy of the narcissistic patterns that live in all of us that make it narcissistic to hide the wound that's beneath. But when you shed all of that, and you come down to the real core of who you are, you come into the realization that you are your own creator. You are the center of your own universe. You create everything that is around you. And everything that is around you is a reflection of how you see it. It's the way that you see things that make your reality. It's the way that you react to things that create your reality. It's the way you experience your own life that creates all of it. So there is a God that lives in you. You are God. And again, I don't mean that in an ego-based way of you are this all-knowing, all-powerful, you know, whatever, whatever being. No, I just mean that you carry the same vibration as pure love and pure energy. And the energy of source, of the nothingness of the I am. And you now get to put anything you want on the end of that sentence. I am, fill in the blank. It can be anything you want it to be. And you can create anything in this lifetime to attach to the end of that phrase, I am. It's up to you and you only. And so when we think about how the unconscious element co-creates our reality, it's not our fault if our energy or our unconscious patterns are manifesting out into painful experiences in our life. That is not our fault, because how can we be at fault or take responsibility for something that we don't even know is happening? What is your responsibility is that you raise your awareness enough to figure this out. And then do something about it. And so then once you figure this out, then it's like, oh, wow. So I'm not a helpless victim? Like, people aren't just out here like to get me and hurt me and betray me, and life isn't here to just take advantage of me. No, no, that's not what this is all about. That's not what's happening. You're participating in that experience of victimhood if that's where you're at. Because you got the wrong perspective on it. I don't mean to say the wrong perspective. It's like there is like a right and a wrong. But I mean, there is a right and a wrong if you have a certain framework on the ideal way in which to go about life, which is to be free and at peace and the manifester of your dreams and reality. If that's what you want, then there is a right and a wrong. If you want to do something else, then I'm sure there's a right and a wrong for that too on how to get there. But the bottom line is you are the master and creator of your life. And we will draw in certain experiences that are meant to teach us things. Again, co-creating your individuation path towards wholeness. You just don't know it. So we think life happens to us, and it doesn't. It absolutely 100% does not happen to us. It happens with us and with our participation. And I don't mean that we've gone out and done something to then warrant a response. No, us just being who we are with the energy that lives inside of us is going to warrant certain experiences in our life, and then it gets shown back to us. That's why reclaiming your power has so much to do with this whole idea of projection withdrawal. Because we are projecting out onto our reality all the time. That's what makes it our reality. Most of our projections are unconscious, though. We don't know that we're putting something out there into the quantum field that then is giving us something back. We just think we're going about our lives. We're just, you know, keeping our head down, just minding our business. All of a sudden, boom, life shows up. And it's like, what is going on right now? Why is this happening? No, it's because you are participating in that. You are contributing to that effect happening. And this is why the Ho'oponopono tradition, to me, nails it on all fronts. Because it is so much about how you are triggering your environment to show you something back to you. And that if you take responsibility for that, and you do your own cleaning in-house, you can manifest a different reality for yourself and the people around you. When the people around you are doing something, saying something, reacting in a certain way, that has something to do with you, whether you like it or not, or believe it or not. This is why when I went through my Ho'oponopono training, and you watch some of the videos on Dr. Hu Lin doing his lectures, and every time somebody would raise their hand in the audience, he would actually get a little agitated. Because it was an indication that everybody in the room was not doing their cleaning. Because if that person in the room raises their hand out of a space of confusion, it means that all of us in that room are triggering that in that person. Therefore, not doing our cleaning. So anytime somebody would raise their hand, he wouldn't just go over and say, okay, yes, question. Yes, what is your question? No, he would give this like whole, he would say, okay, you have a question. So what does that mean? And then he would run through this whole thing and scare the hell out of people to not want to raise their hand anymore in the conference. But he would make this huge deal out of the fact that somebody was raising their hand and that it was a reflection on everybody else in the room. The fact that suffering exists in this world, hundreds and thousands of miles away from you, has something to do with you. We are all part of a collective here. We are all participating in the collective unconscious and the universal mind. That is a space that we all share. And there are parts of us that live in that space that we don't even know about. And then something gets triggered out of that space, and then shit happens in the world, and we're like, why is this happening? This is crazy. This is not fair. Why is this unfolding like this? And it's because you and everybody else is not doing their cleaning. And as a collective we are moving in a really great direction, I will say. I'm usually pretty cynical about the state of humanity. I am no longer in that space anymore because I'm seeing some major changes go on. And I'm kind of shocked, to be honest with you. I am. And I love it. I'm absolutely blown away by how shocked I am. And it's like, wow. It's like a breath of new life to see how the collective is transforming. I didn't think it was going to happen. So what does that say? It says there's a good portion of the collective waking up right now and seeing things more clearly than they have ever seen before, which means everybody's waking up out of the hypnosis, the mass hypnotic state, and everybody is seeing through the illusion. So there's something going on here. The mass psychosis is starting to clear. And it's quite an interesting time to be alive right now, I gotta say. And so what does that mean? It means that people on the individual level are doing the work. That's what that means. And then when we all join together, there's a huge shift that happens in the collective, but it absolutely 100% starts on the individual level. If you do the work and I do the work, and that person over there does the work, and then it multiplies and multiplies and multiplies, guess what changes? The quality of the collective changes. The whole energy of the collective changes at that point, because everybody on an individual level who's participating in that collective is evolving. So it just stands to reason. Of course it makes sense. So co-creating your reality is it. You are the creator of your reality on all fronts. And you can't slip into that spiritual bypassing stuff that I was talking about last episode and just think that you're the one creating your good parts of life. No, you're also creating your shitty parts of life too. Like, you're participating in that. You're contributing to that in some way, shape, or form. It might not be the way that you think. This is where the depth in the Jungian work becomes so major, because it starts to give you answers about exactly how you're participating, because it's not how you think. You got to go super deep, and you got to add in some metaphysical stuff too to really make sense of it all. And that's when things really start to click. So this is why I do the kind of work that I do, because I have come across these answers, which you're never going to get in the clinical world of therapy. So that's what I wanted to share. I wanted to share that primary truth, which is that you co-create your reality. Period. Point blank. That is what it is. And that's one fundamental universal law that if my dreams could come true today, it would be that every single person knows that, is willing to take responsibility for that, and is willing to do the deeper work on that to really figure out what exactly that means for them in their individual life. Because then the whole world changes at that point. The entire world changes at that very moment when that starts to happen. So that's the major one. The other truth, this did not come to me in the download upload experience, but when I think about it further, the other truth is that your suffering serves you in some way. So if you're stuck in a perpetual state of suffering, and you're like, why is this not changing? I have been doing all this work and I'm still caught in this crappy situation, or I still respond or emotionally react to these triggers this way. I like can't figure it out. I can't get rid of this stuff. It is because that suffering still serves you in a way that you have not become conscious of yet. So it's not going to therefore go anywhere. It's serving you in some way. And you have to ask yourself, how is this serving me to be stuck in this pain and suffering? What does it do for me? Oh, it helps me avoid responsibility. Okay, good. Well, I'm afraid of really what it means to step into my full personal power, because once I do, everything changes. And there's a part of me that's afraid of that. Good, perfect. Best answer I've ever heard. Well, because when I engage in this repetitive, addictive pattern, I can numb out, and it means that I don't have to deal with the surge of creative energy that moves through me because that's overwhelming and too much to handle. Bingo. Well, it helps me avoid things that make me uncomfortable. There you go. So how does the suffering serve you? And whenever I ask this question to people, they're like, well, it doesn't serve me. It's like, oh my God. If it didn't serve you, it wouldn't be here. What kind of answer is that? Of course it serves you. Just think about active addiction. How does addiction serve people? It helps them not deal with trauma memories. It helps them sleep. It helps them, you know, avoid responsibility. They can be kind of like in this like perpetual child state where they just are dependent on whatever, the drug, their parents, the system, whatever. I don't have to show up to life. I'm going to get taken care of. Who the hell doesn't want that, okay? I get to numb my pain. I don't have to go to the actual doctor because I'm playing doctor over here when that feels pretty good. You don't have to do all kinds of shit when you're in active addiction. You just get to say, nah, I'm not doing all that. I don't want to live in that world that everybody else is living in. I'm going to do it over here. How does addiction serve you? Well, it allows me to not have to live in that world. I get to live in mine. I like that because I don't like your world with all these rules and things people have to do to be adults. I don't like all that. I think it's lame. I don't want to do that. That's just lame. Feels like too much work to me. I don't want to deal with all that. You guys are idiots. Every day working for a paycheck and stressed out and you give all your money to the government, all this crap. Yeah, I don't really feel like doing that, so I'm going to just do it my way. Okay, perfect. That's exactly why addiction serves a lot of people. Got to ask yourself, how does your suffering serve you? So when I see somebody that's caught in an ongoing pain and you can't figure out why they're still there, it's like, this just doesn't make any sense. This person like claims they want to get better, but yet their life is just constant pain. No, there's a part of them that wants to be in that pain. That pain serves them, gives them something. Think about it on a real simple level. Think about Munchausen's by proxy. Think about what that is a perfect, perfect example of how pain and suffering serves somebody. So you have a parent who's deliberately poisoning their child, not to kill the child, no, to be the savior, the rescuer, and the caretaker of that child, and then to get a rewarded for it. You take the child to the doctors all the time. Oh, my child's sick. My child has this. What is going on with my child? Can you please help me? Oh, so now you show up as the caring, devoted, doting parent, right? Meanwhile, you're putting freaking arsenic in the kid's cereal. You know what I mean? That's a real pathological level of it, but that's exactly what it is. I'm going to create sickness so then everybody pays attention to me and look at how great I am. I think about people. I'm just going to be real for a second. This might sting a little bit, but I'm going to say it anyway. I have known people that I truly believe developed cancer because that cancer was going to serve them in a way that nothing else could. So that person gets cancer, and guess what they get to do now? They get to join cancer recovery support groups and have a community built around them of people who care when nobody else cared about them before the cancer. That's all they ever wanted was somebody to care. They get doted on by the nursing staff and the doctors every time they go in for their chemo and radiation. Again, people care. Now I have a community. I never had a community before. I lived alone. I had nobody. And all I wanted was to be cared for. All I did in my life was care for other people, and I never got anything in return, which, by the way, is what breast cancer in particular is all about. The symbolism of breast cancer is a giving and giving and giving of nurturance, not receiving any back, and being enraged about it. Whether it's repressed rage or whether it's active and out there. So somebody gives and gives and gives, doesn't get that back in return from the people that they're giving to or elsewhere. They can't find it elsewhere. they are now susceptible to developing breast cancer, and there's a good chance they might. If they already have that gene inside of them, think about epigenetics. That situation of giving the nurturance out, not receiving any back, and then being mad about it, that right there is the recipe for turning on that cancer gene, that breast cancer gene. That you want to talk about epigenetics? It's not just about environmental toxins and things in food and lack of exercise and medications and the literal things that will turn on certain genes. No. I mean your psychological processes that will also turn on and turn off certain genes in your body. And also change genes in your body. That's the epigenetics I'm talking about. So then the person develops the cancer. And you think that cancer is going to go anywhere at that point? No, that cancer is not going anywhere because it serves that person. They have people that care now. They have somewhere to go during the day. They have a support group they can join. There's a t-shirt they can wear that's called, you know, cancer survivor or whatever. In cancer recovery. And they may go into remission, but they have not healed the psychological patterns that turned that gene on in the first place. So are they gonna heal permanently and not have a rebound effect of the cancer? I would say probably not. That cancer is probably going to come back. Because as long as that psychological process is still active, in which that cancer is going to serve them in some way, why would it go anywhere? You think about people that don't have good boundaries and are overweight. Well, why is that the case? Why are so many people with bad boundaries overweight? Because they have not figured out and healed the psychological process that makes boundary setting hard. So what happens instead? The body now becomes the boundary. The body becomes bigger, and that makes the person feel safer. And because I don't know how to set boundaries in my actual life, the body gets bigger. That's what ends up happening in that situation. I can't say no, so guess what? I'm going to have my body say no instead and back you up that way and put as much distance between me and you as possible. Also, empaths tend to be also overweight. Or if they're not and they're thin, they might have a really hard time dealing with other people's energy. And it's because when you're in that bigger body, you have a bigger deflection, you have a more solid boundary between you and everybody else's energy around you, and you absorb less of it. If you're an empath and you're thin, you then don't have that body mass to protect you. So you got to do a lot more work, and you have to really figure out how to set those boundaries. And if you can't, you'll end up gaining the weight, like the empaths that are overweight. And then, so if that weight is now serving a function that makes life easier for you, and it's the one thing that is really hard for you, which is absorbing other people's energy, why is that weight going to go anywhere? I don't care what diet you go on, what medication you take. I don't care what crash fad diet you do and drop the weight instantly. And then it, guess what? It's going to come back because you haven't fixed the psychological pattern. And the psychological pattern is that over and over and over again, you are resistant, avoidant, and fearful of setting boundaries. You don't know how to shut it off and turn the switch off. So you stop absorbing other people's emotions. So once you start figuring out how something serves you, then you can get to the deeper root of the issue and find your way through it. Think about somebody who's caught in grief for like years and years and years and years. There's something about that grief that serves that person. There's a part of them that doesn't want to change that grief. They like it. They want to stay in that sadness. It does something for them. They don't know how to go off and live their life independently. They still want to stay attached to the person that's passed. Or there's something about being in the sadness that feels good. Maybe they've become addicted to it. Maybe they've built their whole life around this grief concept. So they can't let it go. They're now a grief counselor. They're a grief whatever. They're an author. They write about grief. I don't know. I mean, you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, I'm just going to kick it up a notch. I'll just go like real, I'm not going to say conspiratorial, but yeah, you know, somebody else might. Think about, I'll just stick with the cancer. Think about the cancer industry. Think about the freaking Heart Association, the Diabetes Association, the pharmaceutical companies. They don't want you to heal. They need repeat customers because they've built a whole conglomerate corporation out of the illness. Look at the cancer societies. Look how many people are employed in these corporations. Look how much money flows through these corporations that goes to buying all their buildings and keeping their whole system going. If cancer was cured, all those jobs would be lost. That whole industry would crumble. Same thing with the pharmaceutical companies. They just want repeated customers. They don't want you to disappear. Why the hell would they want that? They're making billions off of your suffering. They're making billions off of the side effects that you're getting off these medications. So then they can throw another medication at you to freaking cure the side effect of the first drug that you're on. What are they, you don't actually believe that they want to put themselves out of business, do you? Do you actually believe that? Because if you do, yeah. Yeah. You need do a little work on that, because that's not true. You could say the same thing about therapists. You know how many therapists get attached to their clients because it's a paycheck? That's in direct contradiction to, like, the wellness of the client. If the client gets better and moves on from therapy, isn't that what you want? That's why I say, I desperately want my job to become obsolete by the time I leave this planet. And I can say that. I can say that and know that it's coming from the most authentic, truthful place. Because I never intended to be a therapist. I'm going to be totally real with you. I've said it in previous episodes. And I've struggled for many years because there's a part of me that doesn't want to be a therapist. I'll be honest with you. That's why I really want to be a teacher instead. But I know how rich my life becomes when I work one-on-one with people and am willing to also do the work of myself to be in that space and guide them through whatever's going on and be there to support them. And it's a challenge for me, and I like it because it really pushes me to my limits. But I did not set out to say, like, oh, I'm going to go and help people. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into their suffering with them, and I'm going to go into it with an open heart. Nope, because I had way too much of my own crap going on, riddled with anxiety. I'm like, there's no way I can sit with people and do this. Are you kidding me? I'm going to make somebody anxious. Here they are coming to me to get help with whatever they're dealing with. And like, all my shit's coming with me. I can't help them. I'm going to make them feel terrible just by showing up into the room. And I was that way for a long time. To the point where one of my advisors, one time I had to do a presentation. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. My anxiety is so freaking high. And we had to record these mock therapy sessions. Fake therapy sessions with the peer of mine in my classroom. Wasn't even a real session. And I had to videotape it. And it was so painful. And I said that to my advisor. And she's like, well, you really need to think about whether or not this is the right field for you. And in that moment, I was like, yeah, I can't do this. I'm just going to get this degree and be a consultant. Because I cannot do this. So I like the fact that I don't actually really always want to be a therapist. Because it keeps me on my game and it keeps me focused on what the integrity of this work is all about, which is that I want you to get better. That's what I want. And I want us to do this together. And if I can make that happen, mission accomplished. So when clients are like, yeah, I think I'm going to take a break from therapy. You think I'm chasing them? No, because if I was going to be attached to a client, that would be entirely unethical. And not from my most authentic place. It would be out of a fear. Afraid of them leaving for whatever reason. And for most therapists, it's because that's a paycheck. I'm going to be real with you. It's just the facts. So if they have a vested interest in your well-being, they have to be okay with losing money as they go, because clients should be leaving their practice. It means they're doing the right thing and they're doing a good job. So we have to think how all of these things serve us. How are things serving us? And not just, you know, it's beyond what meets the eye. It serves the cancer industry, the cancer research industry. It serves them to have cancer keep going. It serves the pharmaceutical industry to have people be sick so they can throw meds at it. They don't want to actually get to the root of the problem and find out and work on preventative medicine and find out what's causing all this stuff. Why in God's name would such a corrupt institution and system want to do that? So when you really want to get to the root of something, you're coming from an authentic place. And when you think about how something serves you or how something serves the system, you start to really start to get it. And so that's what I want to leave you guys with. That's those two pieces right there are the two core universal truths of our reality as human beings that I pray become part of the collective consciousness by the time I die, without question. That we don't even question it. That is something that we just know. So what do we got? Like 45 years or something probably before I'm heading on out of here? You know, we got 45 years to pull this off. Like, I think we can do it. I really do. So, anyway, that's what I wanted to share today. I mean, that's, people are going to react probably in all kinds of ways. If you're reacting to that information that I just laid out, take a pause, take a step back, and be curious about what part of you is speaking through that reaction. That's my tip. All right. All right, you guys. I am out of here. I will catch you guys on the next episode. May the light always lead your way. Be well, everybody. Third Realm Integration Podcast and related content is intended to provide information and or entertainment only and is not a substitute for mental health or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not delay mental health or medical consultation or substitute a mental health or medical professional's opinion because of what you heard on this show. Seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a mental health or medical condition. The host of this podcast does not provide emergency support for mental health or medical issues. For questions or concerns, visit your local emergency room or contact your doctor. From the amazing Robert A.F. Thurman. The world is what the individual makes it. A world of individuals is the intersubjective, collective minefield of all those individuals. Standing on the ground of freedom, we can see things afresh, enter relationships renewed and with a new purpose of sharing freedom and happiness. We can become poets and seers of reality. We can become great adepts, true individuals, agents of compassion. To live in a world is to be constantly creating that world.